Welcome to Saha Says, where we go over headlines of the week, sharing our in-the-weeds opinions. Joining us tonight on the program is Vesh, a security engineer and Saha moderator, Pinky, who's the team captain for UTSA's CCDC team, Cooper, a biohacker and our news curator, and myself, I'm Sciatic Nerd, the B-Sides SATX coordinator and podcast manager. Up first, we do want to thank our sponsor, Axion VPN, who delivers a quality solution for your private connection needs. For more information about their offerings, check out axionvpn.com. And if you or your organization is interested in sponsoring the efforts of Saha or Saha Says, feel free to reach out to us on Twitter, hashtag SATXHackers. Pinky, take it away.
Sure, so featured in the LA Times this week was an article about how ITT Tech is banned from taking in new students in California. So, interestingly enough, you know, ITT Tech is a for-profit college chain, and they have currently 15 locations in California, and they are all now banned from accepting new students, but current students are good to go. The reason why this is that they've been in trouble with the government and a few other places about basically the fact that a lot of their students, they charge up the ass for. They take federal funding, you know, like most colleges, and, you know, federal grants for the students and whatnot. And there's been a lot of science trends showing, basically, that the students, you know, graduate, don't get a job, and go bankrupt. So ITT Tech has been ordered to pay $152 million to cover, you know, student refunds, liabilities, and whatnot. Because also, it looks like ITT Tech could be going out of business as well, according to this article.
See, now here's the thing. I've got to jump in and say that after having read through this article earlier today, it strikes as one of those odd things. Is it, are you allowed, in your expert opinions here, you know, because we're all full of opinions, expert opinions. No. I mean, seriously, I'm kidding. The thing is, looking at the story, I was concerned that, okay, so can anyone just come after you whenever they feel like it because they want to challenge your right to exist? Because as I read through this, I was like, okay, so wait, so how did someone come to the conclusion that they didn't have enough money to stay in business? What caused an organizational body or an authoritarian body to come up and say, hey, you're not doing this? It says that the education department has led a crackdown on for-profit colleges, right, that failed to deliver the results they promised. So I've met plenty of folks who have jobs from ITT Tech. Okay, so does that mean that state-run institutions like, you know, any number of colleges or universities or private institutions, are they suddenly under the same scrutiny? Can they just be shut down because someone else thought, well, they're not making the grade, literally?
No, because the difference is for-profit versus not-for-profit, I think is what it comes down to. The for-profit, they're going after with, you know, President Obama's new initiative for the whole college loan thing and students being in debt.
Yeah, this has absolutely nothing to do with the fact that one set has unionized teachers and the other one does not. This has nothing to do with the fact that they won't go after Ohio State or UT or any one of these other places that grants tenureship, but they'll go across ITT Tech and all these different institutions ad nauseum because they don't give money to any political parties. Ah. ITT will learn its lesson. It'll start donating and playing the game just like Microsoft had to in the mid-90s. And then all of a sudden, magically, the clouds will clear and they'll get their student. It's all a big money game anyways to them. The government doesn't give a shit about you or your education. All they want to do is say, oh, teachers union gives us money. You don't have a teachers union like most for-profit colleges. Thus, we're coming after you until you do.
What's also interesting is the fact that when at Nationals in 2015 for CCDC, ITT Tech Boise was actually there as one of the top 10 universities. So that by default puts, you know, this little cute for-profit college chain, you know, that one location up in the top 5-10% of colleges for cybersecurity in the nation. So, you know, it's kind of bizarre you're going after them in that way. It's like, these students know they're going in for a shitload of debt. Most people warn you, hey, it's a for-profit, it costs fucking tons. And you know that going in.
Well, it doesn't cost any less than a friggin', or any more or less than, you know, going to one of those other schools out of state. I mean,
yeah, I did out of state. That was brutal.
Oh, yeah? Oh. See,
my undergraduate was out of state because I was actually a military brat. My mom owned land in Illinois. I went there for a year, fucking hate the snow, moved down to Texas for cybersecurity, and whoop-de-doo, I'm out of state until I'm a master student, because even when I'm of age, living on my own, independent, you know, I'm always classified as out of state thanks to my mom, who then moved to California.
Really?
Yeah, they go, yeah, they make you list your parents.
Even if you're 30-something.
No, I don't.
If you're an undergraduate, you have to list your parents half the time. I knew someone in Illinois who's getting fucked up.
Usually it's 26 is the age cutoff to where you are listed as a dependent for financial aid. Well, at least that was my own personal experience. Once I was 26, I was actually able to get grants, despite the fact that I didn't have family paying the bill for me. I was stuck with loans before then.
That's amazing.
That's a change, a little.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, it's still that for me. That me today.
Yeah, I think they must have gone back in the age. But you know, that's good enough. It's different, unrelated to cybersecurity. Let's move on.
Sure. So, I just was surprised at the way that it actually happens that way, where you are starting out in one state and you get charged as though you live there or you don't live there. The rules, it seems to be a sliding scale. I don't know. It's just when I was moved first in Texas and I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do for college, there was the challenge of where are you listed as, who claims you and how. And it just surprises me that it seems like it's changed so much and it seems like it hasn't gotten better somehow. Anyway, sorry. Just, commenting on the gee whiz factor there. Meanwhile, I was wondering, Coop, if you could talk to us about, about a payment ring. Because, you know, you want to put a ring on it, don't you, buddy?
Oh, okay. Really? You're gonna go with that country music as a segue? You've lost your segue privileges.
It could have been a Beyonce.
To move on, Engadget.com today has a nice article about the Visa payment ring that was only available as like a beta to Olympic athletes down in Brazil. And now it's open to everybody. Though it does cost $53 American to get one of these suckers, and the expected ship date is in December. And, you know, NFC never hurt anybody, right?
Yeah, right.
Especially when it's on a ring and it's very easily able to be scanned. Just like a security card.
But so how is this different?
Or implants, or NFC-enabled implants.
There it is. That beat me to it by seconds.
Say implants, you actually have to, if you're going to use the same tool that I use to scan ID cards, you actually will have to dry hump my implant. And if you're actually on me like that trying to get a scan, I'm going to be slapping you saying, get off me, dude. You owe me a dinner and a movie. That's so not...
I guarantee you with a reasonably high powered antenna, I could clip your NFC tag from
30 feet
from a foot away.
From a foot? Wow. Okay. I was,
cause. Next time I saw how we watched Vesh Melissa Cooper trying to get his chip.
No, wait. I thought that was Cybernigma and it was part of an existing competition.
We don't have to do that much. All we have to do is like do the math. We don't even have to really set up a rig or anything. We just do the math on the impedance and, you know, the level of power needed. And then, you know, you can just prove it on paper and be all right. I don't have to actually touch him if he doesn't want to be touched.
Well, I'm not saying that. But at the same time, I would think that that would be a good practical example to display, or, you know, even to demo to show, okay, so you don't have to be in direct physical contact for NFC to be read, and just to show further, because we've all seen it at a conference or in a video somewhere, right? So, I don't know. Just thinking that it's thankfully in the hand, I think. So I don't think it's that dangerous.
Oh, by the way, this is, I mean, nobody's really pointed this out before, but Brazil has led the world in, like, internet banking technology. And this is just another first for them. That's like a lot of banking schemes and whatnot from, like, in the cybersecurity world. They started in Brazil because Brazil had some of the first internet-enabled banking. So this is like debuting, even though it is the Olympics, and I'm sure there are other factors, but there's something about Brazil that goes well with tech and banking.
Do you have a source for that? Can you point us towards that? Maybe something we can look at later?
That was, I'll have to look it up, but yeah. I remembered it was in a series of articles about Brazilian financial hacking pages, and they said, oh, Brazil had the first pubs in the first private or the first internet banking. So if, I'm sure if you put in Brazil and internet banking, you'll come up with a series of.
Okay, I was going to say if you can find the original article series and bring something next week, that would be awesome. If not, I'll see if I can't find something. I'd be willing to plunk down $50 to see how this goes. You know, I mean, if I can get a hold of this and just to take
money.
It's not gaudy either.
Or you're just going to put it in the show notes after the fact.
Well, we would have to have a location to store show notes. Unfortunately, we've been having some technical difficulties in that department. So our show notes would be basically someone commenting to us on Twitter, and it would be in the public eye. So at this point, we're still having to work on that. Yeah. Meanwhile, however, I think it would be exciting to see where this goes if really they are pushed to that point. And speaking of interesting points, because we have those from time to time, maybe, just maybe, it's time to ask about... Oh, actually, I'm about to jump here. Hang on, let me not do that. Sorry, the next up is Vesh. Sorry, go ahead.
All right, so in keeping with my stance on hosting your own email server, Slate.com has posted an article about, hey, you know, Hillary Clinton, let's not judge Hillary Clinton, the public official, by her email server. Let's judge the fact that she was exercising her right to have a private email server, and you should too. And politically speaking, way to show your true colors, Slate. There is nothing in here, not a stitch of she was wrong or anything. Like, I haven't seen more glossing over of particular points than, like, Rush Limbaugh, Rachel Maddow, those folks would be proud of the amount of glossing over on their favorite candidates, you know, bad points. But the article in and of itself makes very good points about, hey, and I run my own email server at home, right?
Right.
You gotta come to my house and take my gear with me. You gotta have your search warrant and everything like that. So, that's not a bad, they make good points and they point you to decent tutorials on, hey, here's how to set up your own server. And it's not bad. I mean, just, I don't support Slate because this article is fraught with just, she's not a bad person, but, and it's just so freaking politically.
At that point, it's not even news. It's op-ed.
Yeah.
And poorly written op-ed too, if you look at it.
Yeah, it is a poorly written op-ed that is full of decent advice. It almost should have said, like, if this were on Breitbart or something, it would be,
sure.
Hillary Clinton covered her tracks and so can you. Here's how. Right below it, there was an article about her using BleachBit or whatever the hell it was, the data destruction service. And it was like, was she really wrong to use that? I'm like, yes, don't try to wrap it up in technicalities. Yes, she was wrong. She's a public official.
Well,
I'm
sorry. But let's talk about the technology of it for a second.
No, let's talk about the technology because that's more interesting.
Yes.
No.
Okay.
That's the point. You don't want to talk about politics?
No.
Yeah. This is
Isn't
about
that
my
a,
opinion on technology.
My rule of pumpsingles.com.
Where you don't have to worry about email servers.
Talk about tech. You have to talk about politics.
Yeah, trumpsingles.com for all of your dating needs. Don't worry, they will be frigid.
This counts as your weekly reference from our program. If you've been listening for the last several weeks, you'll find one of these references worse than an Easter egg. It's more like a broken egg. It just keeps showing up. It keeps stinking up the show every week. So please make sure you note on your passport document that you keep with you. I'm sure. Say check. Okay, I've got the weekly bingo card going on here for Saha Said. So
in stand-up comedy, that's called a callback.
That would be a callback, except this is a callback would be if we actually started the show, dropped the note, and near the end of the series, or sorry, not the series, and at the end of our time, we'd be able to make the callback. But I'm seriously saying to you that this is a 6-week, 8-week running gag. So I don't know if that counts as a callback.
You're right. At the point, Trump singles is a running gag.
Every time you say it, you have to drink.
Oh, okay. Wait a minute now. If that's the case. Yeah,
yes,
see, so
this is a Saha Says play it at home game.
And that's right. And
every time you hear anything Republican said or TrumpSingles.net or .com or .what in the hell, you must drink.
Oh boy.
I may Look, I make both sides a little bit of shit. I'm sorry. I just find one side particularly repugnant.
Well, one size does not fit all, okay? And one size does not fit many. And in fact, I was actually going to call out next to the pull quote in the article how it talked about how, yes, there are risks to self-hosting. However, they call out in the article from Slate.com that there are risks to self-hosting, but with a little work. I feel like it's going to, like, just go back to that Disney song with a little bit of luck, you know? Wait, that wasn't Disney. That was a different musical thing. Anyway, the point is there are risks to self-hosting, but you can go get yourself automated security updates and set up some two-factor on your home front and set up your own email server, and that won't be too bad. And I'm thinking
BitLocker,
to myself...
BitLocker.
But who's going to route it? Because no, you'd have to pay extra because home ISPs do not allow. If they detect the traffic, they will block it. So you're going to have to do some fancy footwork there, aren't you?
Yeah, or you could buy Axion VPN.
That's true.
And then do a reverse tunnel with your email servers. I'm just saying.
No, that's true. But then who's hosting the email service? If you are actually the host, can you connect? Can you route the traffic over the VPN out?
Yes. Yeah, that's the whole point of buying like the Pentest edition or whatever it is the ability to reverse tunnel out.
There you go, kids. That's the reason to have it. See, you learn something when you tune into Saha Says. Maybe it's not what you wanted to know, but it's something you're going to know.
And we shall.
We will. We will shill for...
Shells by the seashore with selling? What?
Yes. I don't know
or
how to use...
Shelly.
I don't know how to use the three seashells. Don't pick on me, man. So, instead, I wanted to talk a little bit about... let's talk about this article from Threat Post. Now, this is an op-ed article, so realize it's just going to be... it is what it is. And the article itself talks about, today marks an exciting development in the often monotonous rehashing of vulnerability disclosure, the ISO standard that began about 11 years ago with the emotionally loaded title Responsible Vulnerability Disclosure, and then was finally published in early 2014 as ISO IEC document 29147. So it's now available for download at no cost. So you can go through that. Aside from that, the article is going to go on to talk about the standard and how the vendors wanted it to be put into play. It's an interesting examination, if you will, of what became an actual from a public document and becoming a more official document. So if you're interested in learning about how bug bounties came to be and how bug bounty programs have developed over the last several years, this will be an interesting read for you. And again, it's a Threat Post article. It's actually called The Time Has Come to Hack the Planet. So, aside from the obvious references to the film, I just wanted to point out that it's interesting to follow something from kind of the germ of an idea to its publishing, and this carries some of that weight. And I was curious if, because most of the time, I found that these IEC documents, these ISO documents, people want to charge you money for them. So if you can find a source and keep a link handy, they do come in very helpfully as reference points later on down the road. But it does come in, it can be useful if you're trying to cite sources and stand on things. I've always found that tracing things to their source, kind of, you know, how did we get here? That comes in handy when someone calls out on you and says, what says it has to be this way? I call it traceability. Actually, I heard it called traceability first, so I've stuck to using that. Vesh, I'm curious if you actually are forced into that where people say, hey, tell me why it is you did it this way or that way.
You're looking at a man who's read the entire 3GPP manual on GSM protocol.
Wow.
So, which, by the way, is not short.
No. No, that is not.
And a little bit on the LTE side. So, yeah, there's, I mean, the thing's about 8 dicks thick. I mean, any one of them. So, just fucking don't bother. Just read somebody else's tutorial. Just do these IEEE ISO standards, but you know, we figured out most of this shit without a standards book. Let's just, do we have to have so many of these damn standards? And this is not commentary on the article, but it's like, at first it starts off as a good idea, and then the rest of the InfoSec career field gets a hold of it.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it's an RFC, and then it's an IEEE document, and then it's part of an ISO standard, and now everybody's got to do it. Where's the innovation after the fact?
Well,
and don't get me...
This is called Kirtansomnia. That's all this is. Because all we do is get too much Mountain Dew and coffee as InfoSec, keep us up all night long because all we do is procrastinate, obviously. So now we need a help for, you know, insomnia. Do people make it fall asleep, which is probably where typos come in, you know, or miss references, and then we read it and we go, oh God, and then we talk about it on the podcast and we fall asleep as well.
Yeah, it's better. Yeah, this is definitely better than an addiction to benzos, that's for sure. Maybe not, I don't know.
Well, with a book that's eight dicks thick, as you put it, yeah, at least then you have something you can beat somebody to death with. It's just being stupid instead of reading it.
Yeah, this can double as a weapon for that, you know, for that point in time when, you know, she burns the roast.
Well, I was gonna...
or he burns the roast, depending on how your household's set up.
So you're saying that we should give this book away to sysadmins on sysadmin day then?
No,
so they can take care of all their ID10T errors?
Yeah, I'm saying we should keep it away from, you know, Ray Rice, OJ, you know, people like that.
So I was just curious about the thickness of measurement. I was curious if we're going long ways or just girth.
No, girth.
Middle out, right?
No, okay. I think girth is sufficient.
Okay. Okay. No, just checking.
Although on the GSM one, it might actually be length.
Yeah. Well. And that, ladies and gentlemen, that is your callback for later, because if you're ever going to have a reach around, I mean a callback, in the middle of your own podcast, I think this would be the unprofessional citation. So there you have it. Here's your hook. Be careful. Your mileage may vary. So
is that what it's called when it's a, you know, instead of, oh, it's a callback to a dick joke, it's a reach around?
Are you feeling the Johnson? You're feeling the Johnson on this one, and you're going tip to tip, I guess.
Oh. At least we're not feeling the burn.
Wow. Well, it depends on what you feel.
So not gonorrhea.
Ah. That now with inching sensation. No, wait. Itching. Never mind.
It'll last longer than what? 4 to 6 hours? Go see a doctor. 8 hours, whatever.
If you can actually believe it, that's actually all the news we're covering today. And I know you're really thinking, wait, there was news in there? Well, instead, we're going to plow straight ahead and talk about the hacks of the week. But before we do want to thank our new sponsor, Dangerous Things, who delivers custom gadgetry for the discerning hacker and biohacker. So check them out at dangerousthings.com. And again, if you or your organization is interested, I don't know why you might be, but if you were, you could check out the efforts of Saha or Saha Says by reaching out to us on Twitter at SATXHackers. Anyway,
Wait a minute. Let's back up. You do realize that you introduced sponsor Dangerous Things right after about eight dick jokes.
Well, that,
we're never going to get sponsors. If we
can implants. I'm sorry. But, you know, if we want to talk about dick hacking, we can always talk about, you know, Rich Lee and his Lovetron 9000.
Well, wait a minute. That's not the story I was going to read. I was going to read the one about the authorities investigating Russian cyber attack on the New York Times. Now, the only problem with this is that
the cyber attack reported against
is that there's going to be one of those. I knew there was the second I clicked through that link. U.S. officials say they're investigating a series of cyber attacks against New York Times Moscow Bureau in what authorities suspect is a continuing onslaught of sneak attacks by Russia. Why is New York hanging out in Moscow? I'm just curious. Why would the New York Times have a bureau desk in a foreign country? I can understand when you have national news desks, but it is New York, and everybody knows that New Yorkers love New York better than anywhere else on the planet. I mean, I did live there for 6-7 years, so I'm used to the idea. But, you know, it's kind of like you get to Texas and everybody in Texas says that Texas is the best. You know, there's a little hometown pride there. But I'm just kind of surprised how the hacking article, it goes on into this long diatribe of who got hacked by whom and why it's important. And I just don't know that it makes sense for anyone to go out there in an information security sense. Like, hey, I'm a news organization. I'm going to go ahead and tell everyone I'm a news organization. I guess I'm going to sit out here and become a target and paint a target on myself. I don't know. What do you guys think? Pinky, if you are going to go somewhere and say, hi, I work for a large news organization, I'm going to post where I have all my stuff. Doesn't that just invite trouble?
It just sounds like the best idea ever in InfoSec. I mean, just paint that target. You know, if we really want to go for the pun there, you know, get third-party access, have them hack you through the HVAC, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, why not? People can't learn how to be private. They don't know OPSEC. So let them learn the hard way at times. You can only forgive stupidity and ignorance so many times.
and this falls into the category of the list of stories that are going to be endlessly repeated. And I think the truth of the matter is that you are going to make yourself a target if you claim to be media related. And maybe that's appropriate. Coop, are you, for or against social media and the news when it comes to, announcing yourself?
If you know how to, set up and configure things properly, then why not? But, we all know that it's one of those things. Nobody knows what they're doing and how to do it properly. So why not, let them break the things? That's why people get paid to fix it.
Yeah.
Yes. True. As Pinky definitely put in our chat window, # job security.
Does anybody know?
Because I can fix it when stupid people break it.
Does anybody know that, you can 1099 security professionals? You don't have to friggin' sit there and wait. I mean, our rates are reasonable, folks, and we'll take almost any job.
But how do you justify the cost of all that alcohol you're going to need to complete the job until you have a big breach, like anything in the news? Then it could be like, oh, now we have a reason because now we need to save face and make us look better now by being like, look, we hired the best, blah, blah, versus we hired the best for defense. Well, that's a boring headline.
How are we going to find cheap alcohol in Moscow? I have no idea.
It's a funny question.
It's a good question.
Potatoes. Yeah. Lots of potatoes.
Lots of potatoes.
Antifreeze.
It's only in the beer. It's not actually a delicacy. It's an ice luge. What? Go. No, sorry. Anyway.
Wow.
So I believe that it is my turn in the news circle to discuss ATM hacks, because really there was nothing. I mean, we have a stack in the hacks of the week,
yeah.
And a lot of them were some of them were the stolen accounts thing, and the ATM thing just grabbed me a little bit better this week, but because they actually stole from the ATM itself, they didn't steal from customers' bank accounts, which I found, which is odd. It's odd because typically when you hear about a hack, and this is about Taiwanese ATMs, and it is from securityaffairs.co, which I believe is the British version of .com. I don't know.
Yeah, I think so.
Something like that. Back, UK.co, yeah. Something.
Right, that's co.uk, right? It usually ends in a country code. Anyway, yeah, go ahead.
But I digress. So they actually stole from the ATM itself. No bank accounts were actually accessed. They just stole ducats right from the friggin'. I say ducats because I have no idea what the hell they measure Taiwanese money in. It's like
I believe they're called baht, BAHT, I believe.
Baht. Okay, bots, dongs, wands, and various other funny
currency names.
Dude, Asians have the best currency names other than Canadians. The loonie.
The loonie. Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
Loonie.
See, because rupees are awesome. I think that sounds pretty awesome. It costs you thousands of lira. Just a bunch of rupees, and how many yuan is this going to be? There are fantastic names out there for currencies.
Dollar is so boring. Yeah, exactly. botnet. I like that. Thank you, Cooper.
There it is.
Botnet. So what is this? This is a botnet. It's a net designed to get bots.
That's right.
And that's their networked ATM's name, right?
No, that's not.
Did I not read that? Yeah, it was called botnet.
Gaps. So wait. What's actually very exciting here is that this literally is like you saw in the movies in the 90s, how somebody does something crazy to an ATM and it just starts spitting out cash, right? So
yeah.
I agree with you that that's a fascinating take on this story, because someone actually did find a way to inject malware into the hardware. That's the actual surprising thing here, and I'm curious to know how they did that. Because, I mean, if you're going to steal money, how did you get it into the system? Obviously, it's not through the insert your credit card or debit card here slot. It's got to be some other way that you had a person on the inside, right? I mean, how do you get that into the network? You have to do it from the network itself.
Yeah, this is like an Office Space style thing. Security Affairs. You want me to read your stuff. First off, it says WordPress right in your title. So
yeah.
Please, up your game a little bit, please. Slugs exist. However, yes, that's what I want to hear. I don't care. None of us anymore, not in the security industry, care about how much money was stolen. You could, if it was an awesome, it was USB access, or somebody had a SIM card that exploited the underlying system, that would be great. Like, tell me that. You're right. A security magazine. We care about the security implications. None of us give a shit how much money was stolen. If it was a dollar, but it was stolen a really cool way, I want to know about that damn dollar.
This is the actual thing you need to understand about the mind of people in this industry, is if it was done in a cool and unique way, that trumps all. No pun intended. that
boom.
But it's the truth. But it's the truth. If someone came up to you and said, I've got this device in my friend's pocket over there, I've already scanned your information, and I'm using it right now to buy a coffee. And they walk up, and the guy calls out Rumpelstiltskin, and you pick up the frickin' coffee and walk off with it, and you notice that $2 is missing from your account or whatever, then you would be like, wait, how the heck did you do that? It would stand out as something that would be worthwhile mentioning. And that's truly what this community delights in, is unique ways to set off the sprinkler, etc. Just like the film show.
That's just going off of these stories, man. You know, like, we try to not only be informative and witty, but tell you how to do your jobs better, because that's what everybody in InfoSec is there for. Hindsight, criticism, you know, the occasional correction when you're an asshole.
Okay, maybe more than a little occasional. Save us, Pinky, save us.
Yeah, so speaking of somewhat innovative, I suppose, there was a report about, you know, a new ransomware called Phantom, F-A-N-T-O-M, don't think, you know, that's actually spelled how it sounds, hitting the street as a fake Windows update.
Uh-oh.
So, you know, yeah, here we go again, more ransomware, yay.
Yeah.
But the fun thing about this one is, you know, it was discovered by AVG malware researcher Jacob Crosdeck. That's based on the open source EDA2 ransomware project. The fun thing about this is that as it's encrypting your files, it displays a fake Windows update screen. The more the little wheel progresses, the more of your files have been encrypted.
Oh, man.
And if you look at Task Manager, it calls itself like Windows Update. If you look at its details, it's called Critical Update. When it finally actually manages to encrypt all your things, its little screen is displayed in horrible English. The BleepingComputer.com even mentioned this is the worst one yet, grammar-wise, with everything, and reading it briefly was pretty awful. So,
oh my gosh.
Good luck deciphering it. You know, one, your files, good luck with it, and two, good luck figuring out how to contact them. No, I'm joking. The email's clear enough.
Yeah, but
good for them.
But the thing is that, okay, so I have a friend I know, who actually says that they're currently experiencing an attack of ransomware, and they were so excited during the discovery of this, but not in a good way. They got, I guess, kind of panicked maybe, and they deleted the email or the text file that got left behind that told them how to contact the ransom people. I said, wait, so you actually deleted the only way to reach out to these people? What are you going to do? And I don't know. How do I get my files back? Because I think you're done. I think if you've actually deleted the file, the contact us email file or whatever it was called, then I think you're kind of stuck.
You would be. Because right. You need to provide that little key that indicates this is the key we use for this person's computer.
I'm not going to tell you who asked for my help, but let's just say they were a PhD who was in charge of cybersecurity at a particular school. Not local. And not foreign, not domestic. I'm not going to give you any indication. It could be here, it could be there, it could be anywhere.
Okay.
But PhD, who is also chair of cybersecurity, called me up and said, how do I get, I've got ransomware on my computer, how do I get rid of it?
Oh, man.
And I told him or her, pay the fine.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, well, that, he or she is like, well, that seems inelegant. And I said, well, so is calling up somebody who's not a PhD, who's not in charge of a cybersecurity area, and asking for help with ransomware. That seems a little bit more inelegant to me.
So, in the end, it sounds like this person went and had to pay it up to get back their files, I would imagine.
Well, $300 lighter, I could have done it for, you know, a couple hundred bucks an hour and then just said, oh, well, you know what? You know what I did? I took your first hour and a half worth of paying me, and then I went and I paid. Oh, here you go. Here's a good note. Tell everybody that you can help them with their ransomware and then ask for money up front to, and then pay the ransom to get the unlock key. So, and then you could be like the guy who unlocks people's ransomware. For way more money, like they pay you $2,000, but
well, it costs 300 something to get it.
Yeah, 300 baht or whatever they, you know, whatever they charge.
Yeah, I don't know what the going rate in baht, the conversion rate is. I have to look that up. Hang on.
I don't do Monopoly money.
It's only Monopoly money in this country. Although, if you're coming back through certain airports, you can get raked over the coals for the exchange rate.
Mm. Yep. Yeah. You heard it here first, people. Don't exchange at the airport.
Yeah, no, don't ever. If you can do it ahead of time. Oh, ouch. That's not good. So one Thai baht is worth 29 cents.
Wow.
Okay. Well, that's not bad. I mean, it's not like funny money. I mean,
no, it's 34 to one, right? So one U.S. dollar is 34.66.
Yeah. You said 29 cents to a buck, right?
No. So one baht is worth 29 U.S. cents.
Okay. So that means like 3.5 bahts is a dollar?
Well, wait. Maybe I've got this wrong. Yeah, it says 34 baht. 34.66 baht is one U.S. dollar, apparently.
Oh, okay. So then each baht is worth like 3 cents.
3 cents. Excuse me. It was 2.4.
Yeah.
I can't read. It's a problem.
Okay. See, and people wonder why the hell we still have pennies.
Oh,
because
gee.
Of this.
Yeah.
Because of this. You anti-penny assholes out there.
Yeah, no.
This is why we have pennies.
But we can't represent them.
So
I mean,
throw them at people?
If you get rid of the penny.
Exactly.
I've got a friend who's a currency. Yeah, this person is hugely against the smaller currency pieces, the metallic ones in particular. But then go over to other countries where they have, instead of loose change and they use actual small bills, literally small bills, that's worse. Now you've got like a giant wad of paper that's useless, really. So, okay, forget it. It's not even worth like, okay, so you wanted a soda. Let's imagine you want a soda. You're going to have to put 1,000 of these stupid things into the machine. I have a decision. You've died of hunger, starvation, or dehydration by the time you finish inserting all of the individual bills into the machine.
To be fair, I don't think coins are any better because half the time the damn vending machine rejects your coin anyway.
Yeah.
So then you're pushing the fucking butts and start back from zero. So I think either way, you're dying from starvation.
But this comes back to when we go to Park downtown for Saha and we get back those dollar coins. I have had more people marvel at me. Where did you get that? A parking meter, essentially? I was parking.
Wait a minute. So a backpedal. They give you dollar coins out of the thing?
Yeah, they do.
At the River Center.
Yeah.
Follow-up question, why are you paying for parking?
Because
the street meters are free after 6.
That's if there are spaces open.
Right. Because sometimes you come running in late, and you're like, I don't want to go look around the block 3 times looking for parking. So I just use the garage that's above Geekdom.
Geekdom.
Yeah, that's what I normally do, too, because I'm running late half the time.
Yeah.
Saha never starts on time.
It always starts early.
Saha is always next week.
By the way, if you're listening to this podcast, hey, on the 6th of this month is the next actual in-person Saha get-together, where you can hear Vesh, Coop, and Pinky and myself, very likely anyway, all be there and just say something stupid out loud. If you want to see us in person so that you can actually put names and faces to the sounds you listen to, if you're actually listening to this podcast, and then by all means, please come on out. Things start at what time, Vesh?
6:30. And by the way, it's the 6th of every month, rain or shine, whether we're here or not. You show up at Geekdom Event Center at 6:30. Somebody will let you in. And if nobody's there, talk to yourself about security for half an hour. But 9 times out of 10, there's people there. Actually, 99 times out of 100, there's people there.
Yeah, there is. And people will show up saying, so what are we doing tonight? Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Coop.
And if your name is Vesh, you'll probably get an argument over talking to yourself about security.
Yeah.
In the 30-minute period, yeah.
That's okay.
Look, I come equipped. That's all I'm saying.
Hey, that's good. And see, at that point, then it's about the argument has girth or length. Which do you want to measure your argument by? And that's a callback. That is a callback, good sir. And I'm working it. I'm
insert
not...
dick joke here.
I didn't say that.
Thank you for the comedy lesson.
No, you don't need comedy lessons from me. You've actually done very good study. Honestly, if you want a good discussion of comedic structure, talk to Vesh. He actually is very sharp on this stuff. It's a worthwhile conversation if you're looking to build it up. Because if you're doing open mic night somewhere, and we all know we all have wanted to at one point or another, I think it's a worthwhile conversation. Sharp stuff.
That requires talking to people. I never wanted to do that. Fuck you.
Wow.
Well, you should do it.
That's awesome. Thank you. Wow. Thank you. Johnson. That was fantastic. So I was wondering if maybe we could move on and talk to articles about crackers there, Coop.
I don't know. After that, I think we have had enough crackers already talking.
Hey!
ArsTechnica.com has an article today about a cracker who stole 2.9 million credit card numbers, and he just so happens to be a Russian lawmaker's son.
Oh.
Yeah. So, you know, like, monkey see, monkey do, what?
Oh, no, that would be interesting. But, I mean, just because the son's doing it doesn't mean that this isn't a sins of the father kind of conversation, is it? You're just insinuating.
I'm insinuating just to get the conversation going.
What we're saying is that the son is doing illegitimately what the father does legitimately.
Oh,
you gotta learn more. And by the by,
politician, what?
Just because somebody has stolen 2.9 million credit card numbers does not mean that they have access to 2.9 million credit cards. There's still, like, you can go on the, well, I hate to say the dark web, but in certain IRC channels right now, and go ahead and purchase lots of credit card numbers for a very nominal sum. It's not like, I mean, the guy's going to get some money for them, maybe, but not anymore. They're known.
Right.
Well, so basically his shit's all just vanished.
The article says here that he sold the numbers with a 95% guarantee of validity for $20 to $30. He also sold the numbers with a 65% chance of validity for around $7.
Is that per number?
Full boat.
Oh, well, no, then he did make some money then.
No, he did make it. She made a shitload of money, but I'd be very curious about that turnaround. Normally it's 30 credit card numbers for $1, not one credit card number for $30.
Well, wouldn't that be reliant upon the validity and length of time? Because it's a commoditized market, right? Right.
Yeah. It's on a Carter's website, as the article says here. And also it talks about that 140,000 credit card numbers and ranked at $2 million.
So,
well, maybe.
I mean,
that's a little chunk of change for, you know, doing what Daddy does just by pulling it out of people's pockets. Figuratively, of course.
Figuratively. Pinky, do you ever follow stories like this? Have you ever messed around with payment systems at all just to see what you can read off things?
That would require free time, and did we not discuss before this, you know, episode? If it's not really related to CCDs right now, I don't care.
Got it. And Coop or Vesh, same question. You guys ever gotten to play with payment systems or payment terminals?
No, not at this point. It sounds like it might be kind of fun to play with, but I would need to be contracted to do such a thing.
Yeah.
I did. I've actually written examination software for payment terminals before. But the most important thing is don't peg the CPU, apparently.
Oh, well, there you go.
If you're writing ransomware for POS system or for POSs, just remember, don't peg the CPU. You'll never get caught.
Wow. Well, there's a detail. I've always been curious about Magstripe because everyone says, you know, you go, you stay at a hotel, you're not supposed to leave the card behind because it has your data on it. And I see these things get overwritten over and over and over again. But at the same time, what's my data? How much of my data is on there? So I've been wanting to go and get one of these eBay swipe readers so I could just see what there was on the actual cards. And I don't have one at this point, so I was looking to just tinker with it because I thought it would be interesting. I'm pretty sure there's probably some open source software to help me read Magstripe, right? So shouldn't be a big deal. Just curious. That's why the other reason I was asking if you guys have ever played with Magstripe, if you've ever seen what actually is on there, despite what pop culture or what the community says is on there.
Oh yeah, we used to have this hand-me-down card cloner for dorm keys when I was in when I was at DLI doing language training.
Oh,
so,
wow.
You know, so that we can get in our boyfriend / girlfriends or whatever's rooms, or get access to the female side when we're on the male side, or the male side when we're on the female side. So, I mean, that's just
high tech shenanigans, you know, kids.
Yeah, don't do what we did unless you want to have fun with your life.
Oh, well, speaking of fun, maybe Pinky can talk to us about some different kinds of fun.
So yeah, there's this article that I thought was a tad bit misleading. It's from The Atlantic, and it says all the ways a Wi-Fi router can be used to spy on you. At first thought, you're probably going to think, okay, it's a typical geotagging, you know, going onto your network type of shit, whatever, spying onto your devices through hacking your router or whatever shit. No, this is actually about a whole bunch of mainly research done by PhDs or PhD students at different universities, so good luck if we'll ever actually see this implemented. Sorry. But basically, there's a few different things of some experiments using Wi-Fi signals to detect people either based on their body shape or the specific way they tend to move. There was also another one of being able to accurately identify humans as they walk through a door 9 times out of 10. There was one that could detect the number of humans in a room and identify some basic arm gestures. Another one that could tell what keys you were pressing on a keyboard by monitoring your finger movements. And then there was a final one that was trying to figure out what you could hear, or basically listening to what you were saying, by analyzing the distortions and reflections in Wi-Fi signals created by their moving mouths.
That's amazing. I'm sorry. It's not practical, right? I mean, very likely this is going to be something that only works in a certain type of environment in a very specific setup.
Well, they're trying to make it work at the smart home show. So then, like, they could tell when you enter a room, if you're the only one, they could dim the lights to however your personal preferences you set up. Or maybe later on, hey, I don't recognize this person. Let me go call the police because maybe you have an intruder, or notify you, or whatever crap.
Yeah, and I think you're, based on just, my understanding of this, you're going to need a far more sensitive, a far better receiver, transceiver, whatever, what have you, than what is available currently in home technology. I mean, I don't know if they're doing this with your standard net gears or whatever the hell it is, like Wi-Fi signals, but I think that you would need, especially to measure what they're measuring, very specialized Wi-Fi gear. I mean, I just don't think there's enough fidelity in a standard radio to get what they're advertising.
Not yet, but the article.
Not yet. Well, there might not ever be, because commodity hardware is commodity. You know, that's all about, maybe, who knows? I'm not going to say yes or no yet.
I'm interested. And Coop, would you buy a router? Since you like body hacking to begin with, would you be interested in hardware that would be able to detect and raise and lower the lights as you walk in and out of rooms and stuff from a consumer level purchase? Or would you want that from a security level purchase?
Totally depends on, how well it's implemented, to be honest. I would rather have something that can be triggered by an implant or an extra accessory instead of just in a default router. Mm-hmm. Because, we know how well that works out, especially default firmware. I don't know of any of us that actually runs one with default firmware, unless it happens to be Apple, then you're just running Kool-Aid.
Yeah. And I'm curious also, Pinky, I know you don't have time for such things in general, but would you be interested from a security perspective of kind of weaponizing one of these higher, more sensitive routers in a blue team, red team, white team type scenario to know where your teams are and what they're doing?
Oh, that's a great idea. I didn't even consider that. That'd be awesome. I was actually considering a few months ago we were talking about the whole news article about, Kinects being used to, or, the webcams, smart TVs being used to record footage for, revenge porn or whatever, selling it online. So can this just be used to help tap into that? Go notify when people are making those movements for that. Turn on the webcam that you hacked into. There you go.
That, you know, there are more ideas. There are more ways to tap into things. But better for defense, I would hope.
You know,
the baby monitors away when the adults awesome. Play.
Hey,
Pinky, I love your brain. Like, I'm gonna use the Kinect for revenge porn.
Why not?
Beautiful.
Yeah, it's so
have we made that joke yet? Instead of FreeBSD, can we just call him Brain?
Yeah.
But I wanted to go from that cruel Apple, whatever that Cooper had into the iPhone 7 thing, because I think we have a story from Gizmodo about Woz not being exactly happy that the iPhone is losing its headphone jack, but I don't understand why. I mean, I get why the fella's mad. He has earbuds. He likes to plug them in, blah, blah, blah. But this is going to happen anyways. I mean, this is taking a device and do you want a phone that is toilet proof? Like you ladies out there who consistently drop your phone in a club toilet. Because that happens. I mean, like, I don't know, you know, guys will drop their phone in some dumb areas, but every time I talk to a woman who's just been out of the club, she always dropped her phone in the toilet like 17 times. But ladies, I don't know what you're doing because your phone still works, but the iPhone 7 is going to be shitter resistant.
Wow. I'm pretty sure they should just put a sticker right on the box that says that.
Yeah, I'm sure there's going to be a power plug on it still, so there's still a hole. For liquid to seep in, it's not going to be shatter resistant.
There's the theory is that they're going all in on the
USB-C.
The conductive power, or whatever the hell that thing is.
Yeah, conductive. Inductive. Sorry, it's inductive for power.
Inductive charging.
Yeah, just because that's what the watch
then
uses.
And there wouldn't be a USB-C then.
No, that
you
wouldn't
would
have to.
You just do all inductive and NFC to transfer data, and. We all know how fast NFC works, or would it just be Wi-Fi?
No, it would be Wi-Fi.
It'd probably be Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
Still be over Bluetooth. I mean, it's still a Bluetooth headset.
But yeah, but slow. Bluetooth is notoriously not fast.
Yeah, I don't want to back up my phone to my computer via Bluetooth.
Wait a minute. That's what you're thinking. I was considering the headset. Thing.
Yeah,
not
think about how many people
I was
you
talking
can
about any hole. No. Like if you have any hole on the phone, liquid's going in. Because, you know, not to make the dick joke again, but, you know, don't you like to stick things in holes, like a USB-C into the hole so you can back up the phone to your computer? So if you do, you know, drop it in something and you can have a nice backup of all your stuff. And not depend on iCloud, which sucks.
No, but that's what the Wi-Fi syncing is for as of 2-3 versions ago, where they introduced
it. I use the Wi-Fi syncing.
I'm sorry?
And it's not. I use the Wi-Fi feature. It's nice. Because my cable's my cat's chew.
Right.
Or I drop my laptop on and, you know, starts barking and trying to set a fire in my house.
Yeah, please stop that, by the way. I'm just a gentle thought.
Just one more thing to be banned from? What?
Oh, no.
I know. It's growing so much. It's bad. I mean, soon enough, the only thing I'm going to be allowed to do is Rickroll people, and I'm personally okay with this.
Yeah, that's a different kind of firewall you're building. That's what I'm here
that's
for.
That's the firewall that likes to watch it burn.
That's what it's all about anyway. But I actually think the Gizmodo article that talks about this, everyone's going to point back to Woz, right, Vesh? They're going to point to him and say, let's go with this. But realistically, I want to keep us moving here because I know we're short on time tonight. So I want to talk to us quickly about an article from unitedlocksmith.net. That's actually united-locksmith.net, talking about Amazon Echo versus Google Home. So the battle for home automation is officially begun. Yeah, a while back. Don't worry about that article. So home automation used to be a thing that people dreamed of after they'd seen an amazing sci-fi movie. But as the years have gone on, home automation technology has continued to evolve. So now we're moving closer to having homes that are autonomously controlled. And Google unveiled their version of a smart home speaker, to challenge the Amazon Echo. And so they're talking about a niche market that's growing in smart speakers that are going to have the capability to be a centralized hub for the entire smart house concept. So with these two devices going against one another, you got to wonder where Apple exists in all this, because they're not going to be silent for long. Microsoft will probably crop up with one. And hey, there are even articles that talk about how to turn a Raspberry Pi into a physically connected Echo using the same Alexa, sorry, I didn't mean to wake up your device there, but, using the Alexa interface or APIs. So you can do this stuff already now. And again, I think we mentioned this last week, Ed Skoutis, who did the, keynote for B-Sides Austin, gave a very good presentation on linking to different types of automation tools that exist today. So there, this is just going to be a very and ever growing, effort of actually connecting all of our crap together. And as we do that, we really do need to think about the security implications, because as we want that convenience, we give up something every single time. That's not to say that we shouldn't do it. It's just we should be mindful. There. End of soapbox. And but that doesn't leave anyone anywhere to go, so I'll instead push and say, so would you guys hook up your systems? Let's start with Pinky, would you actually be willing to hook up a light that your cat could turn on and off or something? No, I mean, how would you hook up smart devices in your home if you did?
I'm not sure if I want to, especially since people are going to get pissed at me for all my rickrolling. So that's just inviting all my InfoSec friends to get ideas from this podcast and screw with my lights, attempt to get revenge porn probably for my own damn doing or whatever crap. So no, I'm going to keep my tinfoil hat on, and they're just going to be able to get photos of me of, you know, tinfoil hats, and maybe I'll just get a Rick Astley mask, so when they do hack into my crap, they just see Rick Astley.
That's hilarious. That's just kind of creepy as well, when you think about an ASCII art Rick Astley staring back at you. So I guess I should ask instead and just push and say, hey, Coop, what about stretchy supercapacitors? Can you talk to us about those things, or is this something that's actually an attachment to my Faraday cage underoos? I'm just curious.
Well, I was going to say, as far as having the network, why not just have a separate network that's not connected out past your firewall, and then all your devices aren't able to be jumped. But as far as the stretchy stuff, it looks like an article here, fizz.org, talking about a theoretical device that's just basically, they're just experimenting, and it's more beta of a possibility in the future, being able to power devices that have been implanted through movements of the body, because it, you know, through rubbing the movement of the, you know, capacitor, it creates power.
That's interesting.
You could possibly do that with t-shirts or other soft fabrics in the future. That's their idea.
Wait a minute. So these things are not most devices not being stretchable. So where would you actually be able to implant them? I mean, yeah, so the 50s, fine, supercapacitors can be used, but, I mean, what are you going to do? Is it something going to have, a slacks ad or a corduroys? There you go. Let's go for a pair of cords that actually charges your phone as you walk, so that zip-zip noise actually is doing something.
I thought the corduroys were mostly meant for offensive attacks. Nearby individuals, you zip-zip along and then zap somebody.
Exactly. I'm glad I'm not the only one who does that.
Yeah, the article here is talking about a stretchy supercapacitor made from graphene.
Mm-hmm.
Is able to, you know, power wearable electronics. And talking about that it could be, you know, help, you know, as you wash dishes, what have you. You have smart t-shirts that power your cell phone. Or, you know, isn't there already a coat out that's made similar to this that you can power your cell phone in already?
I don't think it was so much like that. I thought
that article in the past.
We did, but it just had the connectors, and I think it went in a little bit of solar charging, but not like the connective charging. It wasn't charged by your movements. It was just, you know, extra reserves, basically.
I'm seeing actually some articles that talk about from a couple years ago, actually, that were solar-powered jackets for charging phones. But there was one, wait a minute, they're showing here that, yes, there is one that does do this. It's from back in March. But anyway, go ahead. I'll catch up in 1 second, see if I can actually find the source.
It also mentions excellent stretchable and electrochemical performance relies out of a plane of wiry structures of graphene micro-ribbons. And it decreases the stain concentration on the electrode fingers so the detaching and cracking of electrode materials could be prevented. So it then can be used in like clothing and such.
Okay, so apparently that is a little different from the article from March 6 of 2015 from cen.acs.org that does talk about motion-powered fabrics coming soon that could charge small electronics. So they are actually talking about little wearable meshes in textiles to do this. I thought it was, you know, maybe I was joking about the corduroys, but maybe that is the answer, is that thigh gap is now the enemy. You want, no, I'm kidding. That sounds terrible.
Gosh, you are such a jerk. I mean, how offensive can we be in one podcast? Not nearly enough.
Apparently. So, no, so wow. The terrible. Yeah, so this is actually probably the lowest I've ever gone, but think about it, folks. You do need contact in order to generate the electricity. So you can't actually, you've got, something has to rub something else to generate the power. Now, better still is the actual reactive, soles in the shoes that would capture your energy and power GPS technology in the shoes to help track your walk. But it's just interesting from the point of view of how would you generate that? Like the idea of recapturing brake pad, friction, right? In a car, as you slow down, you charge up some kind of capacitor. Yeah, like in the Prius.
We already have it in the Prius.
So why not use something like that from actual human motion? Maybe it's better to talk about, pit charging. There you go. So you can use, instead of the other more obnoxious reference made earlier, maybe it's in when we walk, just the action of swishing our arms back and forth would be where the mesh could be. So that
so
as you walk, you do it that way.
Skinny people are going to have to depend on fat people to charge their devices.
Because
they don't have enough friction while moving.
I think I'm trying to defend myself by moving and saying we can just put the mesh in the closer to the upper parts of the body that make contact, and I'll back away from the lawsuit that's
instead
probably
of the thighs.
Yeah, that's what I was saying, man. Go from from go. I'm going to go two pits from thighs. There you go. So there's.
Oh. Oh,
so the dark meat.
This
okay.
is the, oh, wait a minute. What?
Oh.
This is not getting any better. So as I continue to dig this hole, I think actually the idea of more wearable technology is interesting, but I think I would like to run away now because this is getting too scary for me.
Sure you're right. You wear your corduroy pants then as you run.
Well, yes, but then it just powers your ability to Rickroll me somewhere down the road. That's what really I'm afraid of.
I'm glad you realized I hacked those pants of yours to do just that.
Pant hacking.
So... another thing to think about is, you know, where's all this power being stored? Is it lithium ion packs in there? We all know what happens, you know, with lithium ion packs. They're totally safe, right? It's not like if you puncture or damage them, they'll explode into a fiery ball of flame.
No, they would never do that, Coop.
So you're not saying that we're going to have to feel the burn, not just from the corduroys causing friction, but also the lithium ion pack bursting into a ball of flame like a Tesla?
Lithium ion polymer.
Soon.
It's lithium polymer. It's different. It's different. Because lithium ion would explode and lithium polymer would catch fire. So if we're just going to go for the details, I think that maybe at that point you might want to have a different kind of firewall in your jacket, quite literally. But that was the reason why we couldn't actually have a mechanically wound car based on a giant flywheel. It turns out that there were earlier tests showed that they could build up the momentum, they could store the energy, but if there's a catastrophic failure of the flywheel, it would probably murder everyone inside the vehicle. So it's possible to build up the energy, it's just where do you store it, and it's not safe. I'm thinking that you probably would actually have to have asbestos underwear or something similar, some kind of flame retardant something.
You will die one way or another wearing these clothes. You will either die from a horrible explosion catching fire or from cancer.
But think of all the blinky lights as you go. You'll like, look at you, man, look at all the cool.
You will go out in a flash.
Well, at least you could have a Surgeon General's warning on the clothing tag saying there that anyone and everyone has never survived fully past wearing these clothes. Everyone that wears these clothes eventually dies.
It doesn't
challenge
say
accepted.
It did, exactly. I was going to say, it didn't say that on my blinky shoes. My blinky shoes don't say that.
Just wear it once, and if you don't die, then you can say you survived and, you know, throw away the outfit, right?
That's possible, because I have the glowy outfit now. I do. I mean, it's not quite Tron guy, but I mean, hey, it's as close as I'm going to get. And no, I'm not going to wear that to Saha this week, so don't ask. So,
about DEF CON? That's a disappointment.
Come on, at least walk around DEF CON looking like Tron guy.
I did,
gotta
sort
do
of.
It at least once.
I did, sort of. You missed it. I did it this time. I've got pictures to prove it.
Oh, yeah. Then you have a talk for this, Saha. Good.
Yeah. You can look do that for your talk. Look at what I wore at DEF CON.
That's what people want to listen to for more than 30 seconds, really? So it'll be a short talk.
In October, I'm totally going to be presenting about this damn server migration with all the fun we had moving a server rack between one building and the next and having to go through sidewalk and, you know, cobbly sidewalk and all that shit. It was great.
Well, that'll be fantastic. I'm going to swipe a story here that I think Vesh would appreciate, which says that scary iPhone malware that steals your data is a reminder that no platform is ever safe. And I think Vesh would truly agree with the idea that, look, I don't care what you use. If you're one of these people who absolutely adores a platform, one or another, the answer is all of your data is at risk all the time. Anytime you share anything, just be aware that nothing is safe. And it doesn't mean to hide under the bed. Just be aware, be smart about it. And this article from Mashable.com talks about the analysis of what to do regarding updating your iPhone. So if you haven't updated, why haven't you? You should be on the latest update. Always go to that settings, general, and software updates tab and check it. If you haven't checked it recently, do it right now while you're listening to the podcast. Just go do it. Tell your friends to do it. Remind them to do it. Go help your family, would you? If you're listening to this podcast, you are probably the point of contact your family uses to get things fixed. Please just say, hey, do me a favor. Go do this right now, because right now on the internet, a crypto pup, that's right, a dog that loves crypto, has actually told us to go and update our iOS. And I'm not kidding either. That's Jessisaurus Rex had a picture of a dog that was looking very sad because people hadn't updated their phones. So there. You've heard it. You've heard a public service announcement to go update your stuff.
But remember, do not download the ransomware version on your Windows machines.
It's very good. That's a good point.
Actually, there's a better update for Windows devices. It's called installing Linux.
Well, you know, if we're going to go there.
Do it now!
First, it's the 25th year, you know, anniversary birthday of Linux. So happy birthday, Linux.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, open source crap that, you know, all Linux fans are saying that is, you know, becoming the domination in the market. I disagree. But to your point, Coop, you can't get away from Microsoft entirely, because if you did it, you still need some products that are only available in Windows, which means you're going to suffer horribly through, you know, using Wine, or you're going to end up dual booting.
It's true. It's true.
I like Wine.
Well, I like Wine and Wine. Yeah, right. But no, I mean, 25 years of Linux, 25 years of actually being able to tinker with things that don't cause you to go outside. I love it. I think it's awesome.
Yeah, it makes you scared and never want to leave outside, but it's okay because the ransomware is coming to your AC anyway, like we covered last week.
Well, yes, exactly. But, you know, that's okay. And Coop, why don't you tell us about the opening Wi-Fi network in a disaster here? I'm going to push us to that real quick because I know we're right up on the time.
All right. Looks like Wired.com has a nice article here talking about safely opening up your Wi-Fi and why you should during a disaster. Apparently, Red Cross put out a big to-do after the earthquake in Italy, asking people to open up their Wi-Fi, remove all encryption in order to help with communications, so that volunteers and you know, first responders are able to be able to have communication just through the internets, especially since just about everything else was knocked out during that earthquake. It seemed like. So, you know, would you actually open up your stuff if it was still working after a disaster? You know, something like, you know, Katrina, what have you. You know, if everything else is out, you know, and not everybody switching over to shortwave or, you know, CB,
sure.
You know, would you actually, you know, set it up?
I personally
have
would.
An open connection?
I would actually set my, I've got two separate networks anyway. So I have in front of the fire, I've got inside and outside the wall, and I would certainly open up and allow priority to the outside the wall. And I would do that and disconnect my personal stuff. So if it meant people could get information to the care for and the loved ones and figure out if their friends are out there, I would totally do it. That's just, you know, hey, I've got an old router I could also set up on the outside of the wall anyway, if I really wanted to. How about you there, Pinky?
What do you say, Pinky?
I would do the same, you know, there's always the concerns of if you get that asshole who's going to hack the world on your internet, you know what? If they're going to be able to hack that much anyway, they're going to do it anyway, so
it's true.
Whatever, do proper security, follow the, you know, link, follow the steps. Don't let them on your same network that's connected to your devices. Don't be stupid about it. Mm-hmm. But don't screw people over from being able to contact their loved ones either, because during these emergencies, you know, Italy, Louisiana, everything recently, there's nothing more scary than thinking that someone you know or love may be dead and you don't know because someone, you know, they don't have access to internet.
So with that, we're going to take it and say thank you so much for joining us for this week's edition of Saha Says. We really do want to make a quick mention of upcoming local cons like Biohack Con that's coming up on the 27th of January in 2017, or B-Sides DFW coming up much sooner than that on the 5th of November there in Dallas. And more information is available on B-Sides DFW by going to www.securitybsides.com and do a search for B-Sides DFW. The other for the Biohack Con is Body Hacking Con. That's BodyHackingCon.com. Thanks so much for joining us, and we hope that you will tune in next time where we might actually talk at a much more slow and understandable pace and relax into a little longer podcast. Guys, any closing messages?
We'll never give you up or let you down that we're not going to cover the news appropriately.
Oh, gosh.
And, yeah, we're not always this depressed and angry against the world. We apparently,
I think that's a lie. Besh might always
have forgotten our medication today and are now sharing it with the world.
And thank you so much for listening. And please send us your feedback, your thoughts, your concerns, and maybe apparently some kind of pictures of fuzzy cats or dogs or something, because apparently we need it this week.
Waffles.
Suggest different ways to play Saha Says Bingo. We can eventually make a card.
It's probably true, and we'll do it. Anyway, thanks much for listening, and tune in next time.